Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined by Nick Lee. Happy Blue Friday pre-combine edition. It's an exciting time in the NFL, unless, of course, you are an owner who was hoping the CBA would be ratified today. I don't know that we're going to see anything happen on that front that's positive here anytime soon. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The Seahawks have a lot of work to do figuring out what their offensive line will look like next year. But Nick, one piece of the puzzle looks to be making significant progress towards returning to the field.
Yeah, on Instagram, the center, Justin Britt, has been posting photos of himself working out and sporting a brace on that surgically repaired knee. And of course, the veteran tore his ACL in Week 8 against the Atlanta Falcons and missed the rest of the season. And before that was a staple in the offensive line and hadn't missed really any time in the previous three and a half seasons leading up to that. So I know that I recently wrote an article and done some research about how the Seahawks might want to move on from Britt, but it looks like Britt has other plans. It looks like he's really trying to get revved up and ready to go. It's going to be a talking point. It has been for several months, and it will be leading up to training camp. How's Justin Britt doing? How's the recovery going? Because, you know, the center is a very important position in on the offensive line. You're a quarterback per se, and the question is going to remain all offseason and preseason long. Will he remain in a Seahawks uniform?
Yeah, that's going to be the storyline for the next few weeks. I would think if they were going to make a move moving on from him, they would want to do that before the free agency period begins on March 18th. And that makes it kind of tough because he is lifting weights, but he's still only 4 months removed from his operation. So he's got a long road ahead of him to make it back from this injury. It does look like he's making really good progress. And I think you can look at both sides of the coin here. I want to start off with the positives of keeping Justin Britt around. And I think there's a lot more than many fans are willing to admit. You see so many fans out there on social media right now. If you mention the name Justin Britt, too expensive, get rid of him. And I don't think that fans realize how difficult it is. Does anybody remember what happened when Max Unger was traded to the Saints? The Seahawks couldn't get a good center for a while. They went through several players before they moved Justin Britt over there, and he finally found a home. And this is a player before this ACL injury that had been very durable. He had only missed only one regular season start in his first five NFL seasons. Obviously, this is a tough injury to come back from, but it's not a career killer like it used to be. And again, it looks like he's making really good progress. The other thing you have to consider here, Nick, is do you really like the options that you already have on your roster? We've seen what Joey Hunt can do as a starter. I don't think he is the long-term guy there. I'd even be scared to have him start an entire season just as a one-year stopgap. And then Ethan Posick, entering the final year of his rookie contract, has not been able to stay healthy. And when he has played, for the most part, it's been underwhelming. Right now, those are your two in-house options, unless you're planning to move Phil Haynes there. And from everything I've heard, Phil Haynes is going to be competing for that left guard starting spot, so probably can rule him out playing the center position. They just don't have options. There are some guys in the draft that are intriguing, but from that standpoint, it would be very risky to release him.
Well, certainly it'd be risky, absolutely. It's unfortunate that they would... they don't have to make the decision by March by the free agency deadline, but it would certainly behoove both parties. But I really am enamored with that center from Wisconsin, Tyler Biadasz. Just a ferocious run blocker. He just fits everything that the Seahawks want to do with the football, running the football down everyone's throats. I mean, Wisconsin, that's what they do, and they've been doing for years. And I always am envious of teams that draft premier offensive lineman from Wisconsin, just because they usually perform pretty well. And so if they do move on from Justin Britt, I would imagine I think that they should look higher in the draft. Maybe, yeah, that late first round, second round, you know, early second day draft of Tyler Biadasz or Loy Cushenberry, Cesar Ruiz, Nick Harris. The free agency is pretty barren. And so, yeah, the options are not there. Of course, I'm not optimistic he'll be healthy, but if he's coming into, you know, July and training camp in August and preseason, he's looking healthy, by all means, you need to have a fully functioning center that knows the offense, that knows the quarterback, that knows how to direct his guys, because he's going to have at least someone probably new to his left at left guard. So the least amount of pieces you have to move in the offensive line, the better. So if he's healthy and if he's really revving to go in preseason, absolutely keep him. I'm just a little hesitant at that point.
I think obviously the big reason that this has become a talking point is the fact his cap hit right now is north of $11 million, and that is something that the Seahawks are probably not too thrilled about. And when his contract, the most recent deal, was signed, that was something that people were looking at a few years ago, thinking there's a chance he won't play the last year in that deal, or he's going to have a restructure. I anticipate the Seahawks have already reached out to Britt about maybe potentially doing some kind of an extension or restructure to lower that cap hit, because this is a guy that's really valuable in the locker room. He's been a leader in that offensive line, and as I mentioned, he's been durable up until this injury. He's still not 29 years old, so he's still a fairly young player. There are a lot of reasons to keep him around, but if they have a few free agents that they are eyeing and they could use some cap space to make some signings that help the pass rush and other positions, then they may feel they have no choice, because you can save $8 million by cutting him. Most of that cap hit is going to end up being eliminated if you release him. You get a couple million in dead money, but the rest of it would be created cap space for them to work with, and that may help them be able to fill another void on the roster. It just comes down to, are you confident you're going to be able to fill the gap? This is a decent draft class for centers. I just don't know necessarily that you want to go into 2020 with a rookie center starting in front of Russell Wilson right off the bat. There are some guys here that maybe have the potential to be starters on day one, but throwing rookies into the fire, especially when you could have both your right tackles, George Fant and Jermaine Ifedi, gone in free agency, and Mike Iupati could be gone as well. They could potentially have three new starters in that offensive line, and that is not the ideal scenario. You like to have continuity up front. There's going to be some changes, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I think with the progress he's making right now, Seattle's probably optimistic and hoping there's a way they can find a common ground with Justin Britt to be able to lower that cap number a little bit so that he can return in 2020 and maybe even beyond that point. This is a player they love having around, but we know the NFL is a business, and if they're not able to reach that agreement, then the chances of him getting cut are increased dramatically because of that huge cap hit that he's got coming off of an injury. When we return from the break, it's Free Agency Friday. We're going to discuss four veteran free agents available on the market, including one who became available yesterday who could be targets for the Seahawks. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we move forward, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and you could increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed? Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform, it's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with Nick Lee. Later in the show, John Schneider has had a propensity for trading down in the first round. In fact, he's done it four straight years. Since we know Schneider is probably already thinking about his options to make it five straight years trading down, we'll be orchestrating our own proposals in the war room in the third quarter. But first, it's Free Agency Friday, as we've been doing every Friday for the past several weeks. We're going to take a look at four specific free agents, one of them being a guy that just became available yesterday. The other three are entering March as unrestricted free agents at the end of their contracts. We're going to start on the offensive side of the football, looking at some players that could be options for the Seahawks in free agency. Yes, they've got Tyler Lockett. Yes, they've got DK Metcalf, but adding a third receiver to the arsenal would make a lot of sense. And there's a younger receiver on the market by the name of Robbie Anderson that, because of his age and his speed, looks like he could be a schematic fit in Seattle.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson, not yet 27 years old. He played the last four seasons with the New York Jets. And, you know, when you play for an organization like the Jets, your stats might not be as good as they can be. And even so, Robbie Anderson did put up some good numbers. In fact, I think he was a Pro Bowl snub in 2017 when he had 63 catches out of 114 targets, 941 yards, 7 touchdowns. And then last year with Sam Darnold, who is budding into an okay quarterback, 52 catches, 779 yards, 5 touchdowns. And the thing I found interesting, that his yards per target, which is 8.1 yards per target, was better than Davante Adams and DeAndre Hopkins, which two, you know, receivers that you might know about. But he's also been pretty consistent, is what I like. And what would make sense for him to become a Seahawk is that he is consistent. He's pretty reliable. 3 straight years, Corbin, he has caught at least 50 passes, had at least 700 receiving yards, and had 5 touchdowns, 3 straight years. And that's with mostly a crap Jets team. So if you can give him a quarterback like Russell Wilson, a good offensive coordinator like Brian Schottenheimer, and with hopefully some other weapons around him to take the pressure off Robbie Anderson, I think Robbie Anderson could have a big season in an offense like this.
What I really like about him, you mentioned the consistency standpoint. What I really like about him is the deep threat that he brings to the table. We know the Seahawks love to take their shots. You mentioned the yards per target. This is a guy with blazing speed that can take the top off of defense, and you already have Lockett and Metcalf capable of doing that. You put all three of these players out there. This is a cheaper alternative because he's never been able to consistently get in the 1,000-yard range. A lot of that not really being his fault, but I think that might actually lower his asking price a little bit, and that would benefit a team like the Seahawks that doesn't want to overspend for a third receiver. I think he might end up being in the right price range for them because of those statistics. I don't think that he's a player that has quite as well-rounded of a game as a receiver as some of the other options out there too, but that's okay in Seattle's offense because they're looking for that third guy to be somebody that can take the top off of defense. He can run routes out of the slot, which gives them some value. My big concern with him is he's had some off-field issues. He's done some pretty stupid things off the field since he came into the NFL, and so that would be something that worries me. And watching Jets games, I guess if I played for the Jets, I would understand why a player on the Jets would do this, but it does seem like he takes some plays off occasionally and doesn't play to the speed that he's capable of. When he's running full speed and he's playing at 100%, he's one of the fastest receivers in the NFL, but I don't always see that from him. That being said, he's played for the Jets. He was coached by Adam Gase last year. It's really hard to stay inspired when that's your head coach. But anyway, moving to the offensive line now, we're moving away from a team that hasn't been able to win many games to a team that consistently wins games, wins Super Bowls. New England Patriots guard Joe Thuney hasn't missed a game in his entire 4-year career, has been part of 2 Super Bowl teams. And obviously Patriots linemen, when they hit free agency, are normally coveted on the market.
And they should be. Usually they're very well coached, obviously. They have a championship pedigree. And Thuney's no exception. Like you mentioned, hasn't missed a game in 4 years, extremely durable. And in case you've been paying attention to the Seahawks guards in the last few years, they haven't had the most durable guys. I know that we are both surprised by the amount of games that Upati and Fluker played last year, but neither of those you would throw around the word durable to describe either of them. So having a guy like Thuney inside would be a nice change of pace. And in Pro Football Focus, I know you have your feelings, Corbin, about their offensive line grades especially, but they consistently grade him as one of the better guards in the game, easily better than what the Seahawks have had the last few years. He was second team All-Pro, actually, this season. And I read an interesting tidbit that Thuney was one of only 3 offensive linemen last season who played over 600 snaps and didn't commit a single penalty. So that in of itself should speak volumes to the quality of the guard that Thuney is.
That tells me he's not a Seahawk. he's not getting penalties. But anyway, being serious here, yeah, the durability factor is huge. And you know he's been well coached in New England. They're now going to be busting out a new coaching staff, which we'll see how that goes. But he's been well coached. He's been able to play every game. He's a really well-rounded player that's good in run blocking and pass protecting. We have seen some teams sign Patriots linemen, and they haven't been as successful in their new surroundings. And I guess the thing for me, I know everybody's going to think this is weird because I think the offensive line is certainly a group that could use some reinforcements with all the guys that could potentially leave in free agency. But I actually like Seattle's guard situation right now. I think Phil Haynes has a lot of upside as a starter at left guard. DJ Fluker was healthier last year than he had been in years. You want to get some depth behind those guys, but I'm confident in DJ Fluker as a starter going in the final year of his contract. I'm worried with Thuney being an all-pro last year. We know how offensive linemen have been getting paid. I'm just not sure he's going to be in the price range that the Seahawks are going to have any interest in spending at the guard spot when you consider what they still have available on the team.
Yeah, Andrew Norwell from the Jaguars, left guard, is getting $13.3 million per year. And so that's a pretty hefty price tag that the Seahawks would be paying for a top-tier guard. But honestly, when was the last time the Seahawks had a legit Pro Bowl slash all-pro candidate at guard? It's been a
Hutchinson.
While. Hutchinson, yeah, really. That's
who just got elected to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, exactly. It's been a while. I mean, they've had some decent guards, but I guess this is my viewpoint. If you're going to break the bank for a guard, I really like Thuney, but I would go out and get Brandon Scherff. That would be, to me, a better fit for what Seattle wants to do. Thuney's a very good player. But I think if they were going to spend that kind of money, and you and I've talked about this, I actually think Scherff would be a better fit schematically and just the mindset that he brings to the table.
Yeah, those two are definitely the top tier guards on this market. And because the top tier guards right now are commanding $13-14 million if you look at the top guards in the league. So that would be a hefty price range for either one. But yeah, I think Scherff would be your guy if you're going to, you know, if the Seahawks are going to stay the course and do what they've been doing and run the ball, you're going to want Scherff. And I'm way willing to pay. I was on a couple weeks ago saying I want Scherff. I'm okay if the Seahawks go all in on the interior line. I think that there's a risk with with Britt. I know that there's a risk of cutting him. But if you do, especially if you cut Britt and go with a rookie center, I think you almost have to sign a quality Pro Bowl type interior lineman guard that the lineup next to him and make up for the difference. And Scherff or Thuney can be that guy.
Going to the defensive side of the ball, new addition to this list. I was going to put a different defensive tackle yesterday when we originally were coming up with the agenda, and then the Lions decided to cut Damon Harrison. And I wrote an article about this earlier, did a video. I think the Seahawks absolutely have to add snacks to their grocery list before free agency starts on March 18th.
Such a great nickname too, and like I hope if I in an alternate universe that my nickname is Snacks, because I just look like a guy who loves snacks, because I do. I love snacks. So overall, his career 485 tackles, 11 sacks in 8 years. Decently quiet last year. 49 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, 2 quarterback hits. Fun fact: he actually played 17 regular season games without the new CBA in 2018 due to the midseason trades. So he's very durable enough to play 17 regular season games in the middle of the season because of a trade.
I think he's only missed like 2 games in his career.
Yeah, 2 games in 7-8 years. And so really, really durable. And you want that, of course, an interior defensive lineman. All pro in 2016. He was once ranked, I believe, the 3rd best interior defensive lineman in the NFL. Just a block sucker. And he won't blow up the stat sheet. He is kind of he's a more athletic and maybe more productive Al Woods, which Al Woods, when he wasn't suspended, was very solid. I think that this would be a big upgrade.
This would be Al Woods on steroids.
Oh, yeah.
Harrison, I know a lot of people are pointing out the regression last year, but I look at that defense. The entire defense for Detroit underperformed, and especially once they got rid of Diggs and traded him, ironically, to the Seahawks, and there's already rumors out there about them moving on from Darius Slay, potentially. I mean, it's crazy. They've been given an ultimatum, you need to win now, but they're also blowing up the defense because, quite frankly, as talented of a group as it was, there are a lot of really good players on that defense. It did not play well last year, and so I'm not going to put all of that regression that happened last year directly on Harrison. I think it was just a bad situation, which is normal in Detroit. Unfortunately for their fans, that's what they typically have happen every single year is people underperform and they're not able to get to the playoffs. They had a really bad year in Detroit, and I know that he's 31 years old, so he's on the wrong side of 30, but this is a mountain of a man at 350 pounds that is an immovable object on the defensive line. And I think from a schematic standpoint, Seattle puts him at that nose tackle spot Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are going to be celebrating. They're going to be throwing a party at the second level of the defense, because last year there were too many times where linemen were able to climb up to the second level and get to them. You're not going to have that problem when you've got big Damon Harrison up there holding serve, combating double teams. And you mentioned not a lot of productivity, you know, flashy stats. This guy made 82 tackles in a season back in 2016. And for the last 7 years, he's averaged 69 tackles a year, a defensive tackle, and has been playing in a 4-3 scheme. So he is not just a space eater. This guy is very disruptive. I am very confident that if you put him in a system like Seattle, where he's got a better supporting cast, a better coaching staff around him, that you are going to see him return to pre-2019 form. When he had a 90.2 grade from Pro Football Focus several years in a row where he was considered elite, I think he still has the ability to return to form there. And so I'm all in. I can't think of any reason why not, unless he wants too much money. This to me seems like absolutely a great pickup for the Seahawks.
And especially when you think about, you're losing Jaron Reed most likely, and Al Woods
is a free agent.
Al Woods is a free agent, and he was suspended, and there's a fluid situation there. They might bring him back. But and he would certainly be cheaper probably than Snacks Harrison. But you got to have someone next to Puna Ford. I think Puna Ford is honing in for a solid and just taking a big leap in year three. And if you have a guy named like Harrison aside of Puna Ford, I think that could be a scary duo inside. And they are kind of similar players in a little bit. But I think having
Puna,
Damon
I think
Harrison,
Puna can play that three tech spot though.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I think Puna's a bit more of a, you know, athletic and what's the word, versatile. But having those two in the middle, I think, especially if you can somehow bring back Jadeveon Clowney, all of a sudden you have a pretty solid defensive line.
I look at this as a Greg Olsen type situation. I think that at his age, being 31 years old, there were talks that he was considering retirement, but now the reports are indicating he wants to play. If you're the Seahawks and say, look, we're going to be a contender, we've got Russell Wilson at quarterback, we'll give you a little less money, maybe some incentives put there, but we're going to give you a chance to do something you've rarely done in your career, and that's win. Most of the teams he's been on have been terrible, and it's not his fault. He's an outstanding player, but you put him on a team that, again, if they re-sign Clowney, you put him next to Puna Ford, that defensive line suddenly is extremely stout. The linebackers, like I said, are going to love having Damon Harrison up there just eating up blocks and blowing up running backs, and he is not a bad pass rusher either. He's not going to rack up a ton of sacks, but, I mean, 11 sacks and 24 quarterback hits for a 350-pound DT in 7 years is pretty productive. He will collapse that pocket. The big fella knows how to do that. So I think this is a no-brainer, unless the price tag is just too high. You go see if you can get him before free agency starts, and then you don't have to overpay for one of those guys when the market opens on March 18th. Wrapping up this segment, now we're going to swing back to the secondary, another big name. And normally you and I are in agreement on this. The Seahawks should avoid paying high-priced veteran cornerbacks. But I think this particular player, it would be warranted to have the discussion, and that is Chris Harris, who's been to several Pro Bowls. He's been an all-pro player. He's won a Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos. He's on the wrong side of 30, but still a very productive 2019 season with 56 tackles, tackle for loss, 6 passes defense, and an interception. And Denver's kind of been in rebuilding mode the last few years, and he's kind of been forced to deal with it. I think that they are ready to move on from him, and I think he's looking for an opportunity to latch on with another contender. To me, it makes a lot of sense, especially considering that he can play the slot corner position as well as anybody in the league.
Yeah, very, very decorated corner. 4-time Pro Bowl, All-Pro, Super Bowl champion, and rarely misses a game. He missed 4 games in 2018. Then other than that, his whole career, it's been 15 or 16 games, so very durable. And yeah, he's certainly more decorated and more productive than like Byron Jones, who we talked about a few weeks ago. But for me, I still am a little hesitant because, you know, you're probably going to be paying more for his past than his future with him, because he will be 31 when the season starts. And I'm looking just strictly at his quarterback rating allowed. He allowed 112.3 quarterback rating last year. And that is worse than both Seahawks corners. It was much worse than Trey Flowers, and worse than Shaquille Griffin as well. So I'm not sure. It's one of those things where, are you really going to pay a guy you know, 10 million, 10 plus million to come in here and maybe be as good or slightly better, or maybe at worst than Trey Flowers will be next year, who's making 800,000.
The other concern you got there, I mentioned the slot corner situation. Seattle could obviously use an upgrade there. Ugo Amadi right. has potential, but that's where Chris Harris has been at his best in his career. But are you going to want to break the bank for a slot exactly. corner? They could have done that for Justin Coleman 2 years ago, and they chose not to for a younger player. So that's a counter argument to the idea here, too, unless they're planning him to be on the outside where – quite frankly, as you said, statistics indicate he was not as good last year as what he had been in prior seasons. I do think there'd be a gamble there, and you and I both subscribe to the Kerry Williams rule. I think this is a guy that can play in any scheme. He's an outstanding corner, but there are plenty of risks with going out and trying to sign an aging corner like this.
Yeah, I get the slot corner arguments. I am pretty high on Ugo Amadi. I think he can take a big step next year, and I just don't think that you should pay a guy 10 plus million, especially if you want him to play on the outside, because I don't think he's that much better at this point in his career than Trey Flowers or Shaquille Griffin. And I'm not sure if, I'm not sure he's $10 million better than Ugo Amadi could be at the slot corner. So for me, I'd be pretty hesitant. I think if you're wanting to draft or if you're wanting to get someone to push Trey Flowers or push Amadi for that slot position, I think that you'd have to go draft or trade. I'm not sure that the free agent market is friendly for that kind of stuff this year.
Yeah, I'd rather go after Darius Slay if they were going to go for a big fish at corner and they were going to spend that kind of money. I think a better scheme fit. And quite frankly, he had a much better season than Chris Harris. He's a couple years younger. There's a lot of obstacles for making that happen too, but I don't see them splurging on a big cornerback. That just hasn't been their style, and I don't expect that to change even with the cap space they have right now. Coming up next in the third quarter, John Schneider's probably got a private office where he's already concocting some trade down ideas a couple months before the draft. We're going to join the party in the war room, come up with a couple proposals of our own to add some extra picks for the Seahawks. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us on Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with Nick Lee. We still have 2 months until the draft, but the pre-draft evaluation process is already well underway. We've got the combine coming up, pro days, you name it. And after seeing how he's operated the past 10 years, you can guarantee John Schneider is already working his brain, thinking about trade down opportunities. Nick, you and I have talked about this a couple of times. Anytime I think about John Schneider and trading down, I envision him being like that meme of Zach Galifianakis with all the numbers in front of him.
Absolutely. I mean, the history speaks for itself. The Seahawks have not used their original first round pick since 2011 and James Carpenter. And last year, they traded down twice in the first round. They made one pick in L.J. Collier. 2018, traded down from number 17 with the Packers, took Rashad Penny, of course. And then 2017, traded down multiple times before drafting Malik McDowell. And then 2016, traded down and then took Jermaine Ifedi. So the history would show that you can almost put money on John Schneider probably trading down again. And really, it's so far worked, and it's one of those things where if it continues to work and they find value later in the middle and later in the draft, why stop? So some people are saying that this might be the year they need to trade up. I disagree. I think that once again they need to stick to their guns and do what has worked for them, which is trade it down and find value in those mid-rounds.
Yeah, really the only argument, and Rob Rang and I talked about this, the only argument you could make for trading up is if you have an edge rusher in mind, since there's not a lot of depth at that position in this draft that's available a few picks before yours, then you could maybe come up with a rational thought for why you can trade up a few picks and it would be worth it. You can justify it. But I don't see any trades where they're moving up to like number 14 or 15. I mean, that gets expensive when you're jumping up like that. You have to give up a lot of picks to move up that many selections in the first round. So I find it very hard to believe that they are going to be doing something like that in April. Much more likely we're going to see John Schneider do what he's always done, which is why you and I are in the war room and using DraftTech's draft pick value chart. We've created a few trade proposals to move down from 27. Now, we're going to do this again after free agency because obviously team needs are going to be altered dramatically based on what teams do during the month of March. Once the new year starts, teams sign free agents, players move zip codes, that alters things. So we'll do this again later down the road, but right now we're doing it pre-combine trade proposals. Nick, the first one that I came up with here, this one seems like the biggest no-brainer to me, because if I'm the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm looking for my next quarterback. And even if they retain Jameis Winston, I wouldn't do it on more than a one-year contract. I don't trust him to be my long-term guy. They're going to be looking for that franchise quarterback. So with number 27 in the draft, the Seahawks near the end of the first round, I could see the Buccaneers trading up to number 27, most likely to select Washington quarterback Jacob Eason, and they're going to want to move up to be able to secure him as their franchise quarterback, the big arm that fits Bruce Arians' offense. So I have the Seahawks trading number 27 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a second rounder, pick number 45, as well as a third rounder, pick number 67. They would be willing to give up that premium to move up if they can get their franchise quarterback.
And this is probably going to be a common theme of teams wanting to trade with the Seahawks in this scenario to get that third or fourth quarterback. You got to trade a lot higher to get the guys like Tua and Joe Burrow. But yeah, the Jacob Eason's of the world will be towards there. My first one's probably not going to go that route because they have a quarterback named Matthew Stafford, which they could shock people. There have been whispers that maybe they're ready to move on from Matt Stafford. Who knows? But it's going to be the Detroit Lions. So the Seahawks, in my scenario, trade their 27th pick to the Detroit Lions for their pick in the second round, which is number 35, and then a fourth round, 106th pick. And of course, the Lions need a whole host of things. They're kind of a mess right now, especially on the defense where we just talked about. They're moving on from a lot of pieces and maybe a couple more. So they got to go, I think, defense here. And probably at that point, trade up and draft, basically, the best defensive player available. They're kind of at that point where they just need a defensive piece to build around. And so I think if a really enviable piece gets down to 27, I could see them pulling this deal and the Seahawks swapping to get their second and a fourth.
I love that you mentioned a team that has so many needs, because I could see Detroit being a team that wants to move back into the end of the first round for a number of different positions. As you mentioned, they've got a lot of vacancies to fill in that defense, especially if they trade Darius Slay. There's a lot of rumors out there with teams being linked to the star corner. If they move on from him, they've got a number of positions that they must address. I could see them being aggressive trying to get back into the first round, and maybe they'll want to find that quarterback in the wings that can be behind Matthew Stafford because he's had injuries too. And that leads me to a team that's in a very similar position that I could see trying to trade back into the first round, and that's the Carolina Panthers. For one thing, we don't know what Carolina is going to do on the Cam Newton front. If I had to make a prediction right now, I think Cam Newton is wearing a different uniform next year. I think the Carolina Panthers are moving on, but for now, he's on their roster, so we don't know what direction that they're going at quarterback yet. Regardless, I could see them picking one fairly early. They could be another team that wants to move up to number 27 to secure a player like Eason, maybe Jake Fromm out of Georgia. There are a couple quarterbacks that are fringe first-round talents that maybe could be franchise quarterbacks that may intrigue a team like the Carolina Panthers. And they have other needs they have to address too, specifically the offensive line. They could have some vacancies they need to fill, which this is a really good tackle and center class. Maybe there's a guy they are eyeing at number 27 they don't think will last to pick number 38 in the second round, and they decide, let's trade up. So the trade I came up with, Seattle trades number 27 to the Panthers. They get in return a second-rounder pick number 38. They get a fourth-rounder pick number 110. And they also get a sixth-rounder pick number 184. The Seahawks currently do not have either one of their native sixth or seventh-round picks. They are expected to have a compensatory pick in the sixth round, but they only have one pick after the middle of the fifth round. So I would see John Schneider trying to prioritize getting another pick or two on day three.
Yeah, you know he's going to be wanting to capitalize on the day three picks, and that rings true for my second scenario. They make a trade with a team that I have some baggage with, of course, the Los Angeles Chargers, formerly of the San Diego Chargers and formerly a team of mine that I now have disowned. But I'll try to be impartial here. The Chargers are clearly most people think are going to be taking a quarterback. By all intents and purposes, Philip Rivers and the Chargers have gone their separate ways, and he's done a lot for the franchise, but now it looks like they're going to be looking for another quarterback, and they do have a higher pick in the draft. I believe it's a six. Yeah, six in overall. So you're probably thinking Justin Herbert, or maybe they get trade down, or maybe over, maybe reach a little bit for a Jordan Love. But either way, they're probably going to take a quarterback. And so I'm actually thinking that later in the first round, they're going to want to shore up the pieces around their new quarterback, whether that's an offensive lineman or a weapon like a receiver. So I'm going to trade the Seahawks' 27th pick in the first round to the Chargers for their 37th pick in the second round, and then get a 5th and 6th from them as well, the 151st and 186th pick. And then the Chargers will probably be looking for maybe a tackle, maybe a guard, or maybe somewhere in the offensive line, like a Josh Jones from Houston, or somewhere in that late first round area, that so just to protect their new quarterback and get some pieces around him. So I'm going to go with the Chargers here, making that move.
If I was in the Chargers front office, the two positions that I would address with those first couple picks, you got to get a new franchise quarterback. This is a draft where them picking early enough, they may have an opportunity to get one of those top guys. And then you need to get somebody to protect that quarterback. There are a lot of questions out there whether they will retain former Seahawk Russell Okung. They could use a new starting left tackle they can mold as the blindside protector. And you mentioned Josh Jones. That would be a name that I think would be very intriguing to the Chargers to trade up for. Being that their second round pick is at 37, that's a big gap from 27. So they would have to give up a couple additional late round picks minimum to be able to move up. But if they can get that top tackle to protect their new quarterback, then it would be worth that price tag. My last proposal here, I'm looking at another team that really we don't know what they're going to do with the quarterback position, because the Colts do have a young quarterback in Jacoby Brissett. The jury is still out whether he is a franchise quarterback or not, though. They have been linked to Phillip Rivers. Maybe that's where Rivers ends up landing. Rivers has also been linked to the teams in Florida as well, namely the Buccaneers. So there's a lot of moving parts that'll be determined over the next month, but the Colts could very easily be looking for their next franchise quarterback here. Maybe they have interest in Eason or Fromm, one of those type of quarterbacks that's a fringe first rounder. And the Colts have a lot of ammunition early in the draft too. So if there's another position they really are coveting a player and that guy's available at 27, I could see them being a bit more aggressive. Chris Ballard functions a lot like John Schneider and typically likes to trade down, but I could also see him bucking that trend this year because they're coming off a kind of disappointing season in Indianapolis. So my trade proposal, the Seahawks send number 27 to the Colts for pick 34, a fairly early second round selection, and then they get a fourth rounder pick number 119, as well as a sixth pick 193.
I'm going to get crazy for my last one here, Corbin. So the Miami Dolphins, they need lots of help. Obviously, they almost always do these days. They have, as of now, three first-round picks, the 5th, the 18th, and the 26th. What if we gave them the 27th pick, too, so they would have back-to-back picks?
This is turning 26th. Into Madden, like when I amass like 15 first-round picks with my team.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the Raiders of last year. It seemed like the Raiders had half the first round last year. But yeah, if things get crazy in Miami and all of a sudden, it's one of those things where if you draft well and get three, four first round picks, you all of a sudden could have a very solid team that next season. So let's get crazy and give Miami that 27th pick of the Seahawks. So that means that Miami will be picking 5th, 18th, 26th, and 27th in the first round. And Lord knows they have lots of needs. They'll probably take a quarterback number 5, probably Tua. In that scenario, unless something crazy happens, but I would imagine it's probably Tua Tagovailoa. And after that, of course, they have to give Tua weapons, and of course, they need a lot of help too. So I'm going to have them trade to the 27th pick for the Seahawks, and then the Seahawks get the Dolphins' second round pick, which is 39th, and then a 4th, 6th, and 7th. The Dolphins have a lot of day 2 and 3 ammunition, so I think that the Seahawks can get 4 picks from them. And for this number 27 pick, because I think the option of having back-to-back first-round picks and having 4 picks in the first round would be pretty tantalizing for a team that's rebuilding and trying to build around a new quarterback. Because when you're talking late first round, I mean, lots of guys can fall. If Gross Matos perhaps falls down there, I think the Seahawks might take him if they falls to 27. But there are going to be plenty of options for the Dolphins in the first round if they have 4 picks. So let's get nuts, give them 4 picks. And in the first round, and then in return, the Seahawks get 4 picks from the Dolphins.
the theme of that final one, it's all about the number four. That would be, I tell you, that would have to be a player. The Dolphins are just like, we absolutely have to go up. Maybe there's somebody they wanted at 26. There's two players they want, and they're like, oh, man, but we only have one more first rounder. Well, now you have two more. So I wouldn't rule it out. Teams do some crazy things at the end of the first round when there's a player they really want, and the Dolphins need talent anywhere that they can find it. So with all the draft picks they have, they got a ton of capital. Maybe they are the team that would be willing to give up that many late round picks. And then the Seahawks end up with 10 or 11 selections like they did last year, and they can load up at a number of positions. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at Nick Lee 51. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, you can contact me, LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When we return on Monday, Rob Rang and I will preview the NFL Scouting Combine from Indianapolis, discuss Seattle's comp pick situation, and much more. Enjoy your weekend. Go Hawks!